ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $12.99 per month. That's Downpour.com. On this episode, Joshua Smith's paintings bring dreamscapes to life. Stevie Marco leads the Rasta Rock Opera to new heights artistically and spiritually, and the New York Times bestseller Ricochet by Sandra Brown in her audiobook feature right after the news you want to know.
Charlie Stanton.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
And I'm Maya Seligman. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Recently, I had so much fun at the Ashland Independent Film Festival. It's been going on for like more than a decade. And it was my 8th year volunteering in the box office.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's always been a real blast. I get to meet a lot of people that are in that industry and talk with people who are really excited about going to films and appreciating them. And so my mom was visiting from Berkeley, and we ended up seeing films for all 5 days throughout the day, and then I would work in the box office in the evening. I saw some fabulous films. Running from Crazy, which Barbara Kopple, she directed. It's about the Hemingway family, Mario Hemingway, and, you know, her grandfather was Ernest Hemingway.
Right.
Pretty fascinating.
She had a mental illness, did she not, Mario Hemingway?
Well, it certainly runs in her family. In her family, it's been... like 7 suicides.
I know Ernest committed suicide. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so she's dealing with stuff herself, and it is portrayed in a really captivating way in the film. Another one that I found really fascinating is The Internet's Own Boy, the story of Aaron Swartz.
Co-founder of Reddit.
Exactly. And you know what age he was when he founded it?
I'm going to guess he was 16, 17 years old.
He was 14.
Oh, my God.
He was brilliant. It showed video of him when he was like a toddler, and he was saying the most brilliant things then. Mm. So it was fascinating. His story is really interesting. But
unfortunately, it had a bad ending, didn't it?
Yeah, because he hacked this nonprofit academic organization.
Yeah, through either Yale or Harvard, one of the big
MIT.
Schools. MIT. It was mm-hmm. MIT, that's right.
And he ended up being arrested and charged with felonies, mm-hmm. which would have put him in jail for more than 35 years. And it was really interesting how they told the story in such a way where you really got to see the elements that were combined in it.
You know, as tragic as Aaron Swartz's story is, I'm glad that it's out there for what it really showcases. One of the things I think that it showcases is how the criminal justice system in America has not really caught up to the technological advancements that we have, because the crimes that they charged him with really did not fit. What the guy was doing was trying to make paid for academic studies and things like that available to the public. Things
exactly.
that they charge ridiculous amounts of money to have access to. And so he used the computer in the basement and he quote unquote hacked them. He had access through the school, but he made them available to the public. And the crimes on the books, 35 years for making some academic papers available, and you have somebody, you know, steal millions of dollars from investors and they get 5 years.
I know, it's crazy. He was really the scapegoat. What they recognized is they wanted to pin it on him to try to prevent others from doing it, But the truth is what he did, he wanted to bring this knowledge to the general public, and his intentions were so good. And so for those of you who don't know, he actually ended up taking his own life. And so,
oh, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's terrible.
Yeah, like last year, I think it was. While he was under house arrest, he took his own life.
Yeah. Who knows what he would have created if he had lived on, because he was just a genius. And I loved his vision of how he could spread that to the general public. Yeah. He was interested in politics, too, which would have been fascinating.
Yeah, I think that's a – I really want to see that. How long was that? Was that like a full-length movie?
Full-length okay. movie, so I highly Good. Recommend it.
I hope yeah, I so
the,
see it.
The whole film festival was a blast, and it makes me really recognize the value of independent films.
Yeah, you know, and there's a lot of independent films, you know, that we've seen over the years, and you know, not just, you know, through the Varsity, which is where we show here in Ashland, but, you know, I've been to ones in Riverside – that were just, you know, fantastic. And Catalina has one.
Oh, yeah.
And New York and whatnot. And we did a story with Pam Stanley, who is the former wife of Paul Stanley, the guitarist from Kiss.
Yes.
Who that was just recently inducted into the Hall of Fame, right?
Right.
And Cyrus, you remember this? You know,
yeah, I do. Yeah, it was a great interview.
Yeah, and you know, remember the short was called Shoot the Moon.
Shoot the Moon, yeah.
Yeah, Shoot the Moon, right? And it was a short, right? Well, now they just picked it up. They're going to make it a feature film.
Oh, no kidding. That's cool. Awesome.
Yeah, so isn't that kind of cool?
I think that's really cool, short film, you know, and that's one of the great things about these film festivals, too, is that, you know, you could make a short film, 5, 10, 20 minute, whatever, and find something there and then have it turned into a full length, you know, mm-hmm. studio film. You know, a lot of studios they see these things, you know, and they say, oh, and, you know, like Aquila and the Bee, you know, was submitted, I can't remember for what one, some writing thing, and then, oh, now it's a full-time, you know, full-length movie.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, short movies are like seeds that are germinated, right? You see them,
yeah.
You know, some of them will grow into beautiful plants, and some of them, you know, just like, well, you know, they just didn't make it.
They were yeah. perfect the
movie
way they
auditions.
Were. Well, they also, the film festival featured kids who had produced the films.
Oh, yeah.
So it was really great to see them, and they actually, they were up there doing question
did you have
and answer.
Did you have a favorite?
Let's see. There was this one that was claymation, and it was really fun to see.
Oh, okay.
And then it was a young boy that was got up there and talked about it, and it was just like you could see that he has a lot of creative spirit, and so it'll
awesome.
It'll be cool to. I like that there's a venue for that to be supported, and who knows.
Well, you know, something that ties your story and Charlie's, you know, regarding Paul Stanley's wife and Aaron Schwartz, you know, the common thread there, Reddit, you know, Aaron Schwartz co-founded Reddit. Mm-hmm. Paul Stanley recently did an AMA on Reddit. And if you don't know, an AMA is an Ask Me Anything. And celebrities will go on Reddit and people can just post questions. And it's one of the great things about a site like Reddit is making the world smaller. You know, I never would have as a 12-year-old boy, thought that I would have the chance to communicate with Weird Al or with Paul Stanley or, you know, right. whoever it is. That there's they're really, I mean, every day there's people on there doing.
Well, but speaking of Paul Stanley, I want to let you know that he has a new book coming out, right? I mean, I'm sure you can read a lot of it on Reddit, you know, whatever, you know, but he just tells the whole story of Kiss, right?
Oh, neat.
And, you know, some of the things that come out of it, you know, are kind of mind-blowing. Like, one, he was only born with one ear.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was only born with one ear. He had the canal where he could hear a little bit out of it, and through surgery, you know, they got it repaired. But yeah, he was only.
So maybe earrings wouldn't look so good on him.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they were at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and stuff like that, the four original members, you know, accepted. But, you know, their band lineup had changed so much, you know, that there was a lot of friction in the band, right?
Right. You mean like Ace, Paul, Gene, and. The other guy.
Yeah, Chris, you know, Peter Chris.
There
yeah, you. Yeah, I mean, you know, but, you know, it was clear, you know, from the book and, you know, from the presentation and stuff like that, you know, that, you know, that, you know, it took him a long time to get in, but it shows you the evolution, you know, of the band and not just Kiss, but, you know, any band, you know, where the lineups changed so much, right? But the two main players are the ones that kept that band going. That was right. Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up, because when you were talking about Reddit, and Ask Me Anything, I'm curious what people ask Paul Stanley.
Yeah, I should have gone back and looked at it. The thing, I've looked at a lot of those AMAs. I usually catch them way too late, like 15 hours later when the people are already gone. But I do like to go back and look through. And I'd say probably 75% of it are stupid questions. But every once in a while, there's like a really good nugget. And some celebrities are better about it. Some are not. Some are just there, promoting.
Yeah, what I'd like to ask him about, the recent headline I heard about Paul Stanley was he was really critical of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Really?
Yeah, right after he got inducted. So, and that was all I heard was the headline. So if I was on there, I'd want to know a little bit more about why. Yeah.
You know what? And I'm so glad you brought that up, Cyrus, because he was, all of the other members were so honored to be in there, right? And it is a big honor, right? And he was the songwriter, still is the songwriter. And the singer and stuff like that. And he was super, super critical.
That's surprising.
Of the Hall of Fame. He said he would show up, but he thought it was a sham.
Huh.
He said that, he thought that it's turning into a popularity contest.
Mm.
It's not, are you talented? It's, how popular are you?
Is that irony? Because isn't that kind of what Kiss...
Yeah, no kidding. That is a little ironic. Well, let's see. Who else? Because we talked about this back in January, right? I think, Maya, you did a story on that, on the inductees this year. Mm-hmm. And it was Kiss, it was Hall & Oates, and Nirvana. And, I don't know if I see really where Paul's coming from on that, because I would, Nirvana was groundbreaking at the time. Kiss has been not just a staple, huge record sales, really a force of popular culture. I don't know much about Hall & Oates. I mean, Cyrus, you're a music guy. What do you think about those three groups? Do you think any of those were overhyped and didn't belong in the Hall of Fame?
No, actually, I don't. I think they all were very deserving of being inducted. Nirvana, I always remember Nirvana the most probably out of the three because, they happened, during
our teenage years.
Right. Yeah. And they were so big. I mean, because it was like glam rock. And then it was like, all of a sudden, it was grunge.
Yeah.
And it was because it smelled like
Teen Spirit. And let me make this comment about this. And I'm glad to hear you say that all three are deserving, because I do think all three are deserving. They all, three in one, one way or the other, broke.
Influenced.
Broke some barriers.
Yeah.
I mean, Kiss, they were completely original for their time.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, they've had a million people, imitate them since, from Alice Cooper to whoever, right?
Right. Nobody's done it as well or as big.
Hall & Oates was just a big band, and they refused to play the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, not because they had anything against it, but they had other gigs that they were going to do. And they decided, it was an honor enough, just to be inducted.
Right.
And,
so they didn't want to screw their fans who had already paid for tickets to other concerts.
Right.
Have a performance. That's pretty solid of them.
Right. And then Nirvana, and this is kind of a trip, what they did, and I don't know if you watched the show or not, and if you haven't, go back and watch it on YouTube or HBO or whatever, right? But what Nirvana did, I thought, which was so cool, and I feel a look coming over here from Maya, because I just feel a look coming over here, right? But what Nirvana did was they played, right? And the original band played,
except for Kurt, I'm sure.
I'm sure he was there in spirit. But, they had so many different people, that wanted, to play, and they approached other people. They approached big people like Paul McCartney, Eddie Vedder, from Pearl Jam.
Right.
And people from that era, and Chris Cornell from Soundgarden, they approached other people, right, to perform the songs with them, right, and take Kurt's place.
Right.
As the singer, and they all turned them down and said that they didn't feel that would do, them justice, and they didn't want, be compared,
right. Who did it better, Kurt or Eddie?
Yeah. Or taint the performance. So here's what Nirvana did, which I think was so cool, right? They replaced everyone. They did four songs, and they replaced everyone with four different female singers that nobody's ever heard of.
Huh. Nice.
Well, and on that tip, something I didn't even think of or notice until recently on Facebook with Rolling Stone magazine, Kurt Cobain committed suicide like 20 years ago, and then 94. Right after that, Hole came out with Courtney Love.
Right.
I mean, her album dropped like 2-3 weeks after he died.
No kidding? It was that close?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'd never even thought about it till Rolling Stone magazine, you know, they had a bunch of covers.
I wouldn't read too much conspiracy into that. I'm sure, you know, that they were both working on their albums at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, you know, more of a coincidence. I think she could have been a little more sensitive, but Courtney Love's never been, you know, known for being sensitive.
Yeah, that's not exactly what she's known for.
She probably, you know,
she could actually have waited. Has a number of lawsuits against her. It was interesting to read.
Yeah.
But here's nothing too. If you watch a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Courtney Love was there.
Oh, really? At the induction?
And she performed a Nirvana song.
Wow.
With them.
Wow.
I mean, and you know, for all, you know, the...
She owns the catalog, doesn't she? I think...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because her husband wrote all the songs.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, even though she gets so much bad press and she's, you know, I don't know her, but, you know, she just doesn't seem like a nice person. You know, she is talented.
Yeah. No, I agree. And she does a good job acting, too, you know. I think that was a good idea with what you were talking about with Nirvana, Cyrus, because... You know, I just can't see, nobody could replace Kurt Cobain. I mean, there are just certain singers or actors or musicians, you know, that you just literally can't see anybody else doing it.
Right,
like, it
yeah,
just wouldn't, like Heath voice. Ledger's performance in The Joker.
Right.
You could not refilm that with anybody else in that spot because the performance was so iconic. And his voice
you know
was so unique.
I knew you were going to go with there with that. You know, I was thinking more along the lines of The Godfather of, you know, I mean, you
another
know,
perfect
you
one.
Know,
Marlon Brando?
No, not Marlon Brando. You know, he had a big part in it, right? But,
yeah.
But the big part was Al Pacino.
Yeah.
You know?
And nobody else could do that.
Yeah. Well, it launched their careers, Robert De Niro, and he's been a household name ever since.
Well, yeah, and you see that more in acting. Like, who once you've seen a performance, and I'm not saying nobody else could have been the Joker. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying anybody else couldn't have been, you know, the main character in Taxi Driver. But after a performance of that caliber by an actor, nobody else could do it and do it justice. And it's the same thing with Kurt Cobain and several musicians. You know, once we've had that, you can't replace it. You can't do somebody else and it's just as good.
It's not interchangeable. You can, you know, but it's not going to be the same.
It's not going to be the same.
No, it's like the Rolling Stones going out on a tour with a different singer than Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, yeah, you can do it.
Should you? Probably not. Is it going to be better? Probably not. You know, no. Is it going to be weird? Definitely.
But then again, here's a little, you know, Journey replaced Steve Perry, and the guy they replaced him with, man.
Is amazing.
Is amazing.
And he's, what, a Filipino kid that they found on YouTube? That's an amazing story.
Isn't it?
It is.
Back to Reddit really quick. This is, for me, the social media episode. One of the things I want to talk about when we were talking about Reddit was Reddit has introduced a new feature, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with Reddit. I use it quite a bit.
Yeah, actually, I discovered it for the first time, and what caught me was an AMA, because I'm a reality show junkie, and there was such an interesting interview with a guy who is a videoer on the Survivor Island.
Oh,
so he gave
cameraman.
So he gave the real scoop. Like, people asked him all sorts of questions that I've always wondered too, of like, do the contestants do they have sex together? Are they allowed to, you know, wash their clothes and all that kind of
right.
stuff? And so he gave the scoop on that, and it was so interesting to me. Reading through it, I was like,
give us the answer, man.
Oh, okay. So, yes, they do. And
they have sex together?
Not very often, because they're mainly in the competitive mode.
Yeah, so it's pretty dirty out there. I can't imagine having sex in those conditions. I mean,
I would.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
And then they aren't allowed to wash, like, the way it's portrayed is
bathe.
How it is.
Oh,
I mean, they don't have very many things to what you well, see.
They wanted to make it, you know, authentic.
Yeah, it's authentic for sure.
Right.
I mean, they do get their meds and like contact lens solution, but other than that, it's basically no fend for yourself.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
No condoms?
They do provide condoms to live. I was wondering that too, and then he answered.
Bacon flavored or what?
Oh, those would be popular.
Survivor.
So anyway, so Reddit, going back to Reddit, the AMAs are awesome. But one of the new features that they've rolled out, I don't know if you know, Reddit is owned by Condé Nast. And they are now experimenting with, I don't know what they would call it. They have certain users are now considered, they call reporters. And they're allowing for live updating in the course of breaking news events. So what they're doing is now, in the case of breaking events, breaking news, is allowing certain users to post real-time updates and information. As it stands now, when you post to Reddit, you're limited. You can only post like once every couple of minutes.
Well, you know what, dude? Here's the thing that blows me away. That Survivor is still on the air, man.
Yep. I was just watching it this last week.
I was talking to Cyrus about that, and he was watching Survivor, and I said, you know, I remember when I was married, you know, which was a long, long time ago, right? First season of Survivor came out, you know, and my ex-wife, she still watches it, and I'm like, man, this is like 21 years old.
Dancing with the Stars is on like their 15th season.
Yeah, but so for Reddit, like, does that mean when you're looking at the screen, it's automatically loading?
Like automatically update? Yeah, it's updating. So when they post an update, it like refreshes it, so you don't have to constantly keep like when you post now, you know, there's a time delay, and then you have to wait a certain amount of time.
Okay, Jerry, you're a tech guy.
Yeah.
How long do you think it'll be before Facebook buys Reddit?
That's
a good question.
That's a good question, and I'll tell you this. So Yahoo just bought Tumblr, so that makes sense that Facebook would buy Reddit, and I would say probably within a year. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen, because it really would make sense. You're going to end up with basically two conglomerates handling social media, Yahoo and Facebook.
Well, we were talking about earlier, Jerry, Viren, and I, is that if – you know, the owner of Facebook invites you to dinner,
you're getting bought.
He's going to buy your company. So look for that.
He did call me last night.
Well, he wants to buy everything, the everything company.
So. Yep. Exactly.
I thought it was about Survivor.
He wants me to go on?
I don't know.
He wants you to go on Survivor.
I would never do it.
I wouldn't either. Oh, I might go on The Amazing Race, though. My wife and I have talked about that a number of times.
I would totally cheer for you. That looks really fun. Yeah.
We think we'd be a good sell because, you know, we're interracial. There's an age difference. There's, you know, she's a world traveler. I've barely been out of the United States. So she speaks three languages. I don't even speak my own very well. No, I'm just kidding. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's all those. It would make for good TV, we think.
You should totally apply.
We've thought about it, but I don't know.
I don't know, man. With a resume like that, man, I think you're a shoo-in.
maybe. Just might be. Do you watch Survivor, Cyrus?
Not too much. It just happened to be on TV, and it was interesting because it was they're getting ready to vote, and everybody's like, you know, trying to get their last little bit in before they get knocked off.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
It's all a delicate balance of like, you want to be look really strong, but you don't want to overwhelm people.
And you don't want to like say who you're going to vote off. You know, you don't want to get into some.
Keep that close to the vest. Do you watch, Charlie, do you watch Survivor?
No.
No, not at all. You ever watched it?
No.
Yeah, me neither. I like some reality shows, but Survivor's never even Survivor, Big Brother.
You know, I'm not a big TV guy, and one of the reasons I'm not a big TV guy is probably because I watched too much when I was a kid, and two, I'm not a big fan of commercials, man.
Yeah. That's why I watch online, and I don't have to deal with commercials.
So, Maya, as a reality show buff, what is your favorite? What's like the best one, you think, out of all of them, since you're the expert on this?
Well, I really like Project Runway, and right now it's Under the Gun Project Runway, which is a spinoff of it, because it really shows talent.
Okay.
It shows that, and it helps these young designers have a place where they can really cultivate their talents, and it's fascinating. They give them really fun challenges of, like, you have to make your outfit out of beach supplies, like towels and just very fascinating things. So that would be one of my
Project favorites. One Runway is the one for like clothing designers and that. Mm-hmm. I was thinking the model one.
That one doesn't do it.
All right, so that's your favorite. What's your second favorite?
Top Chef.
Top Chef.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. You know, my kids love Top Chef, and they love ridiculousness and stuff like that. And they tried to get me to watch The Real Housewives of New York. And I go, why do I want to see all my ex-girlfriends?
You know? Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. My wife is a – I'm like Charlie. I'm not a big TV guy. I watch movies. That's one of the things we talk about all the time is we love, you know, movies. But I do watch a little bit of TV. But my wife watches we don't even need cable. We only need two channels.
What are they?
The cooking channel Home and Garden TV. That's it. When I come home, I will either be about houses being redesigned or people cooking stuff. So, and I'm not exaggerating, literally. She has like night shows.
Okay, you know what? So talking about TV a little bit, right? You know, I don't watch a lot of television, live television. You know, if I do watch a show, I usually watch it, you know, which is amazing because, you know, anybody's been to my house and you guys have all been there, man. I've got like all these amazing, you know, things that you can watch, you know.
You got a Kindle, a laptop, computer, TV.
Yes, Sony, you know, computer TVs, you know, I mean, all this stuff. But I
check it out. Turn my toilet into a TV.
Right.
Oh, my God. That would be – or a video camera. That would be worse.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
Joshua Smith's paintings can be seen in galleries on both the East and West Coast. He talked about that and more with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we are talking with Joshua Smith from Connecticut. Joshua, how are you?
I'm great, Charlie. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, the pleasure is all ours. First of all, I want to tell our listening audience that you have a new website up. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I just recently posted some new works. I'm working on a new body of work for two shows that I'm doing. So I just posted this up a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I was on the site, and it's quite impressive. I like the way when you scroll over it, how the painting comes alive.
Oh, great.
And where else could we find your work?
You know, mostly I show on both coasts, East and West Coast.
Uh-huh.
The two shows that I have coming up are in Palm Desert at Christopher Morgan Galleries.
Christopher Morgan Galleries, great gallery. That's where we heard about you.
Oh, okay. And then I'm doing something called the Artist Project Toronto. It's in Toronto, and it's at the Queen Elizabeth Building.
Okay.
It's basically 200 artists that do all original artwork, and you display your work there, and people can come and take a look.
Now, let's talk about your work. How did you, get your style? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, when you start painting, going off of other people. And how did you perfect your individual style?
Well, a long story, but I mean...
we got time.
yeah. You know, it started out when I wanted to learn, you know, from the classical artists. So I would copy artists like Rembrandt and Caravaggio, kind of the Baroque period.
Uh-huh.
And I did a lot of self-portraits and did portraits and focused on the figure. And what happened was the figure got smaller and smaller and the landscape took over. And then it became, there was no figure, and it became an imaginary scene. And it basically stems from dreams that I've had over my life. And they seem to take on this life of their own, this almost this world that... Some people say it looks like a place or looks like somewhere I've been or reminds me of something, but they're just pretty much out of my head.
Oh, that's pretty fascinating. So it's a dream you have, and then you bring it to life.
Right. There was a series of dreams that I had with these different objects in the sky. They were like birdhouses or tree houses, and sometimes the tree would be actually on top of the treehouse or birdhouse, and then you could actually see a little bit of a birdhouse emerging from the trees, different dreams that I had. And I started doing paintings of them, and I completely changed when that happened into this thing that I'm doing right now.
Oh, that's pretty fascinating. And, you know, what do you like working in, you know, oils? What is your preference?
Yeah, it's primarily oils. I do a little bit of oil on canvas or on a wood panel. And a lot of it is, there's some collage items in there. Sometimes I'll put something, part of another painting in there or a photograph that I took or pieces of photographs. And I collage them in there. It kind of adds a little bit of mystery to it, so you have to look close and see what's going on.
I like it. You know, and so your website is joshuasmithfineart.com, is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
Nice. So you've got a show coming up in Toronto and one in Palm Desert. And for all right. Our listeners out there, Palm Desert, you might recognize Palm Springs. This is more of a landmark for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so which coast do you prefer?
Wow, good question. Well, I can't say that I have a preference at this point. Well, I was born in Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in California. Then I moved back out here for my master's in 2002, and we stayed. We basically got going with my career, and it was a great place to raise a family in Connecticut. So I've been here since, and we love it here.
Well, it's a beautiful part of the country.
And my wife was, you know, born and raised in California, Southern California, so she's a Cali girl. She loves it there.
She's a surfer girl, huh? And,
yeah. So we enjoy being there, and her family's there. So we spend a lot of time with friends, and we have a great time.
Yeah, I have two daughters that live in Huntington Beach, California.
Yeah, that's where she grew up. That's her old stomping ground.
Nice. Have you ever thought about painting some of the ocean scenes? Do you have any dreams about oceans?
I have. You know, I have. I've done a few ocean scenes. They're really not. The most recent ones aren't really copies of a particular place.
Uh-huh.
It's more of a mood. I spent a lot of time actually in Northern California painting the coast, and I grew up in Oakland.
Oh, okay.
So I go down to Monterey a little bit and paint the shores there.
Okay, yeah, that's actually it's a very, very lovely place.
So, yeah, that's one of the most beautiful places that that we've been, so.
Well, tell me about the show in Toronto. We have some friends that are musicians in Toronto, and they're always talking about Toronto, how cool it is. So.
Yeah, I've heard so many good things about Toronto, and for years I said, yeah, I'll do it. And this year I just said, I'm going for it. Basically, it's a show where, you know, if you were a collector of fine art, you'd have your pick from 200 original artists, no G. Clays, no Prince, nothing like that. It's all original art. And artists that are coming up, and they're really trying to develop some interest in their work. And these are people that I'd like to network with and just meet other artists from that part of the world. And, you know, when I'm spending time in Connecticut, I'm just busy working. So it's good to be able to travel to a place like Toronto that I've never been to and meet new people and see what happens.
Well, you've got quite a following. I mean, you know, I really, really enjoy your work, and you know, a lot of people do. And you know, you're in Toronto, you're in, you know, Southern California, Palm Desert. Pretty soon, you'll be going to Europe.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that happens.
Where would you like to go?
I love Italy.
Oh.
I haven't spent much time in Europe, but Italy is just have a special place in my heart for Italy. I spent a little time in Florence and in Tuscany. And I just love the architecture and everything about it.
Yeah, it's quite a fascinating place. So what else do you have going on there, Joshua?
Well, let's see. What else I have going on? Well, I also have another show coming up in Hartford, something called the Hartford Art Space, a group of about five local artists. We're doing something that's kind of based around surrealism. It's curated by a local artist here, and he gave me a call and said, hey, how'd you like to do this show? So I'm pretty busy.
Yeah, now surrealism, that's a topic that's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
How do you go about doing a show about surrealism? Maybe you want to explain it to our listeners.
To be honest, I don't categorize my work in any, you know, surrealism or anything. These guys are probably a lot more, you know, rooted into what surrealism is. But they picked me and said, you know, you fit into that category. The show's actually called Beyond the Gate. And, you know, it's really a metaphor for something otherworldly. And I think I'm maybe just beyond that gate. Some of these guys are really way beyond that gate. I'm kind of just past that. So, you know, it'd be a great thing to take a look at, to come to Hartford and see the show, just to see the variety of work, really diverse type of work, or even interpretation of what surrealism can be.
I heard an artist once talking about surrealism, and somebody had told him that his paintings were very surrealistic, and he said that, because I never really thought about it like that, then when I went back and looked at my work, I said, wow, I must live, my whole world is surreal.
Yeah, pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, when I look at your paintings, you know, and especially now that I know that they come out of dreams, that's very surrealistic.
Yeah, I never think of them that way. Like, I don't go to them and say, all right, this painting has to be a certain way. It just comes out like that. It's the natural progression.
How often do you paint?
Every day, at least 5 days a week.
And when you're working on a painting, do you have like a reoccurring dream about it?
Sometimes. There's periods where I go where there's this reoccurring dream. Then I have to go that morning and do a little sketch or something just to come up with an idea. What exactly did I have a dream about? You know, dreams are so tough to really pinpoint. All right, you know, did this happen also in the dream? It's almost like it's just a piece of the dream. And this reoccurring theme of this object floating, or this thing that's just hanging off the cliff. I think it's a metaphor for something.
Like a vision?
And I attribute it to some, you know, things that are going on in my family. You know, so many things I see that are in the paintings that I can relate to. Oh, this must be about this that's going on with my kids, or my wife, or my parents, or friends. And I see that actually being almost like a glimpse into this psychological world, but I don't necessarily come to it with this concept of I have to paint this today, and I see it come out. It's pretty interesting.
So what are you painting currently?
I'm working on three paintings right now that are 3 feet by 3 feet, and they're basically, I think they're about my wife. They're it's this tree that's growing out of a wheelbarrow.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, I just started painting and I thought, you know, this has got to be about my wife and how, you know, I took her from California and brought her out here.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I'll definitely be working on that.
Okay, well, we'll be looking forward to seeing that on your website.
Yeah, thanks.
So if you want to purchase one of Joshua Smith's paintings, you can go to joshuasmithfineart.com. Any number of galleries that you're in associated with, and the one in Palm Desert is the
Christopher Morgan Galleries.
And is there be a gallery in Toronto?
No, this is just a 4-day location, and that's the Queen Elizabeth Building.
Okay. You can also find Joshua Smith on Facebook. And your Facebook page is, what is it called again?
Joshua Smith Fine Art.
Joshua Smith Fine Art on Facebook. Be a follower. You're going to be amazed at his paintings. All right, we want to thank you for your time. It's been great having you on.
Thanks a lot, Charlie. I appreciate it.
To learn more about Joshua Smith, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
How could something like this go unchallenged by me? Perhaps the government want to make a change, see? Now it's on us to spread the word like a breeze, or how they live free, coast to coast for the whole world to see. What the L-O-V-E sprinkle in a lot of peace. Now that's life, and that's love, and ain't one. And when you got both of those, you don't need no gun.
Stevie Marco and the Rasta Rock Opera prove with their new song that the key is love. He talked about it and more in this interview with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Great. Now, you've heard some of my music, right, on the SoundCloud?
I haven't heard any of your music on SoundCloud. I have watched your videos, though.
Okay.
And, great. Well, I will tell you this, man. You know, I mean, the one that you guys do, you know, about Newtown, it just is, well, it's a beautiful piece of music, and, you know, both of you guys are phenomenal, and the message and all that stuff is just like, you know, it's emotional, man. It's really emotional.
Yeah, it was emotional for us in even creating the music. Yeah, I'll tell you the whole story of that. It's a great story.
All right, let's hear it.
Well, I'm the producer of the Rasta Rock Opera and the primary composer, and also the guitarist and a vocalist in the band. The band consists of 47 different musicians, the players on the album. Touring band has 13 musicians in it. But we have, it was a collaboration of established stars in the music business and new talent coming out of Washington, D.C., all wrapped around the Rasta Rock Opera project. Now, in the midst of doing that, it took 2 years to record the album, over 160 recording sessions. And getting close to the end of the project, I was working on a project on a tune on gun violence and on bullying, because it's such an important topic. And I was a little bit taken aback that after Newtown and all this tragedy, that the arts hadn't really said anything about it. Nobody had done anything on it. And then it started to dawn on me that it might be a little politically scary for them, or risky for them, or the arts in general. Even the Grammys, the Oscars, nobody touched it. So Plex and I were in the process of working on a...
Let me stop you right there. I remember when that happened, and it seems to me that the only one that touched on it was the president.
Yeah, we put the president in the video because he did touch on it. He was one of the only ones, that's a good point, that did touch on it. So right after it happened, that happened on my birthday as well. So we were already in the midst of a composition on the subject, and then Newtown took place. And we thought about it for about a month. We just halted production on that song and asked ourselves, should we do it? Are we, is this the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do? And finally, it just evolved to where it was the right thing.
Okay, you know what? I'll tell you what. You know, for all our listeners out there, all around the world, we are in the United States, and we have a huge following, all around the world. And they may not know, what Newtown is or what happened. So let's hear a little bit of the song right now.
The key is love. When you think about love, you think about the solution to all the world's problems. All the world's problems.
How could something like this go unchallenged by me? Perhaps the government want to make a change, see? Now it's on us to spread the word like a breeze, or how they live free, coast to coast for the whole world to see. What the L-O-V-E sprinkle in a lot of peace. Now that's life, and that's love, and ain't one. And when you got both of those, you don't need no gun.
Yeah, and when Newtown took place, we decided we needed to address this, both artistically and spiritually. And our concept was we needed to tell it from the side of the children. We wanted to go into a school, and we wanted to invite as many students as wanted to attend, and we wanted to do a sort of on-the-fly presentation of their feelings, emotional feelings about the subject. And we did that, and Natalie Gordon, the president of Jefferson Middle School in Southwest Washington, D.C., after talking to several schools who, politically didn't want to get near it, she stood up, got in touch with the superintendent of schools for Washington, and essentially said, it's on. We're behind this. We want to do it. And that was the turning point. And it was just the most amazing experience to have 1,000 children just listening to us perform the song and then actually participating in the video, because the school system gave them off that day. So we were, shooting scenes in the hallway and in the front of the school, but they were all very spontaneous. So what you see there are no actors. It's all real, and it came out that way.
You're right. I've seen the video, and I encourage all of our listeners, to go out, to go to YouTube and see Rasta Rock Opera, No More, featuring Plex Matthews and Stevie Marco, and you can just see what we're talking about. I mean, it's fantastic. The song is, aside from it being, tugging at your heart, I mean, the music is phenomenal. The guy who plays the guitar in it is just off the charts.
Well, thank you. That's me. I appreciate the compliment. I'll take it anywhere I can get it. But
what I mean by that, the guy who plays the guitar is off the charts, is you. is that, you know, when I hear that, you know, I play the guitar a little bit, you know, nowhere near your level, or, but, you know, there's some, you know, musicians that, you know, when they play, it doesn't matter if they're singing or what they're doing, just the riff that they play, you know, just brings out emotion. And that's what I felt when I heard that.
Oh, yeah, we, all of us did. And Flex, you know, you have a, I want to say something here about the song, how important it is on this image of hip-hop. It sort of went in the wrong direction, if you will, in the mid to late 90s, and the message to the youth wasn't very favorable. They're talking about, you know, very negative things, guns and money and disrespecting women and things like that. And this new revolution that's on with the children and merging rap and rock music together in the Rasta Rock Opera is the next generation of the message that's going to come out of the hip-hop and the rap community. And this is why Flex Matthews is a superstar in the waiting and a role model in the waiting. I mean, here's a guy that takes care of his grandmother, donates his time to the church and the youth, doesn't smoke, doesn't drink, respects women, and he sings about that. And so it proves that you don't have to be singing about negative things or about self-interested things, but the message. And our message now is one of healing, especially when it comes to the bullying and the gun. That's what this song's all about, just to create some more awareness that if we could learn how to treat each other right, especially at a young age, and endear one another, and a kid that might be being ostracized or pushed aside or picked on or bullied. You know, the most recent event in Colorado, the kid said that he did it because he was bullied. So this is a serious matter. So our message in No More was no more bullying and no more gun violence, not irrespective of what's happened in the past. You know, and we love that they love it. We're trying to reach the youth. That's what this record's about. And I think that the record is going to be released on Bob Marley's birthday. It's 21 movements. It's 11 compositions. It has all the genres wrapped into it in a lifelong journey of music.
Let's talk a little bit about that. You know, okay, Bob Marley, okay, he is, you know, became, you know, in death, you know, this huge icon.
And so did Jimi. Jimi Hendrix was another once in our record. When you hear the record musically, it's like Jimi Hendrix met Bob Marley and they made that record that they never got a chance to make, because even though they were both icons, they never met. And they were only 3 years apart in age. So we would like to think the description of our music is Bob Marley met Jimi Hendrix with a social message of Bob Marley, and that's where the bullying and the gun violence, we don't over-preach, the whole album's not like that, but we had to say something about it.
Glad you brought that up, because, you know, here's what I want to get across to our listeners. These guys aren't just talking about, you know, hey, you know, this is sad and this happened, which it did, but if you listen to their music, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's a celebration. It starts out, I want to share a few words about the angels will be lost, life so priceless we couldn't cover the cost. She stand militant in the face of the gun, fighting for the unjust and never backed off. You know, talking about the teacher that died in front of those kids. That's a celebration. That's a celebration that, you know, we are going to get through this. That, you know, tragedy struck, but we can make a change. And it's going to start from the youth and the way they treat each other. And the music speaks for itself. In the end, the music always speaks for itself. But it's guys like you, the beginning of this revolution that we're creating and the beginning of this new sound. And you're one of the first interviews we've done, because we were kind of undercover for 2 years. And now we're just coming out, and we are honored to be on your show.
Okay, you know what? I want to stop you right there, you know, before my head explodes. And you know, thank you so much, you know, for giving us a shout out there. This is the point, you know, that I want to talk to and I want to address. Is that one, you know, the reason, you know, that we reached out to you was because your music is so good, you know, and...
Thank you. Thank you very much for saying that. You don't know how much that means to me and all of us for you to say that and mean it like you did. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome, you know, and they are heartfelt, you know, and, you know, and I would say, you know, for all of our listeners out there, you know, the host of a wildly popular show, Get Home and Stay There, whatever, you know, what I'm saying to you is that you guys make great music. And I want to spread it, you know, to the entire world. And the reason I'm saying that is because it's good.
Hey, you know, I can't disagree with you, but to hear you say it and not me say it, I mean, daggone. And I know probably a lot of your listeners are out there going, I wonder what this sounds like, you know, which is the point. So, you know, I'd love to revisit this interview like 3 months down the road, you know, and hopefully, because I think No More is about to pierce the airwaves. You know, we were on some Clear Channel interviews recently, a couple hundred stations, syndication, And we're getting closer and closer, a lot of interest. I think that song's going to break no more, and it should. We need that song. You know, whether you see the video or not, we need that song. We need that message. And I hope the powers to be in radio feel compelled to say this is more than just a new single. This is a needed message that we need to listen to. So I'm looking forward to that song breaking on the radio.
Well, you know, hopefully it will, you know, and, you know, certainly, you know, it'll be broadcasting around the world, you know, with our show. And, you know, but I do want to, you know, stress is that, you know, you guys are more than just, you know, a song about a tragedy. You guys make really great music.
Listen to that record hundreds and hundreds of times and never get tired of it. So that's an absolute fact.
Well, you know, that's cool. You know, and for all our listeners out there and for myself especially, hey, thank you so much, you know, for the music. And we appreciate you coming on so much. And, you know, we look forward, you know, to talking to you again, you know. And, man, you know, thanks, man. It's been such a treat. Thank you, Stevie.
Yeah, you call me anytime, man, and if you just want to talk about music, you know. And to all your listeners, I would please ask that you check out our No More video on YouTube and check out our record.
To learn more about Stevie Marco and the Rasta Rock Opera, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
That I wobbled in my walk and I'm trembling. That's right, you got me shaking.
Ricochet, a New York Times bestseller, a USA Today bestseller. New York Times bestselling author Sandra Brown is back with a spine-tingling story of murder and betrayal and a homicide detective's struggle with his own rules of conduct. When Detective Sergeant Duncan Hatcher is summoned to the home of Judge Cato Laird in the middle of the night to investigate a fatal shooting, he knows that discretion and kid glove treatment are the key to staying in the judge's good graces and keeping his job. At first glance, the case appears open and shut. Elise, the judge's trophy wife, interrupted a burglary in progress and killed the intruder in self-defense. But Duncan is immediately suspicious of Elise's innocent act, and further investigation quickly puts Duncan's career in jeopardy because he can't deny his increasing attraction to Lisa Laird, even if she is a married woman, a proven liar, and a murder suspect. Ricochet's plot twists, as only Sandra Brown can write them, make this a gripping thriller in which a decent cop's worst enemy may be his own conscience, and trusting the wrong person could mean the difference between life and death.
His phone was ringing as he ushered, more like pushed, Elise through the front door. He went around her and snatched up the phone, looking directly at her as he raised it to his ear.
Yeah. Are you up? Dee Dee asked. Yeah. You sound out of breath. Just got in from a run. I've had some ideas about what we learned last night.
He continued to stare at Elise with single-minded concentration. She was watching him with equal intensity.
Duncan? I'm still here.
He hesitated, then said, Look, Dee Dee, I'm dripping sweat, about to melt all over the living room floor. Let me shower, then I'll call you back.
Okay, but be quick.
As he disconnected, he realized that he'd made another ill-advised decision. Already he'd placed himself in a dangerously gray area by not telling Dee Dee about the note. Now he'd omitted to tell her who was in his living room, making unreasonable claims about a crime they were investigating. In both instances, he had violated police procedure and his personal code of ethics. Somewhere along the way, he knew he would be held accountable. It made him terribly angry at the woman responsible for his misconduct and for the conflicting emotions that assailed him every time he was near her, and even when he wasn't. As he dropped the phone back onto the end table, she said huskily, Thank you. Don't thank me yet. I'm still a cop with a dead man in the morgue, and you're the lady with a smoking gun in her hand. Then why didn't you tell your partner that I'm here? I'm feeling generous this morning, he said, with much more flippancy than he felt, especially toward damsels in distress. In a measured tread, he walked toward her. To her credit, she stood her ground and didn't back away. That's the angle you're playing, isn't it?
I'm not playing an angle. I came to you because I don't know what else to do.
Because you see me as a sucker. You're a policeman.
If you want romantic suspense that has teeth, Sandra Brown is your gal, says Stephen King. Sandra Brown is the author of more than 60 New York Times bestsellers, many of which have ranked in the number 1 to 5 slots, with over 80 million copies of her books in print. Her work has been translated into 34 languages. She and her husband live in Arlington, Texas. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com. Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Maya Seligman.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook. And remember to get behind me.
Now, stay there.